those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Alrighty, well, welcome back to the big broadcast, everybody. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to The Drive Time. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. Joining me in the studio for our year-end wrap-up is Rob Washburn. Rob, welcome back to the studio, my friend.
Thank you, Dave. It's good to be here.
We are going to be going over some of the highlights from some of our most recent year that has just passed. And before we get to that, as always, we like to begin with a song. And here is Harry Nilsson with Everybody's Talking on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stopping still. I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. The northeast winds sailing on summer breeze and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me, can't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave. I won't let you leave my love.
Yeah, always a crowd favorite, Harry Nilsson from 1969. That was from the soundtrack of Midnight Cowboy, right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. Welcome back to the studio. My guest in studio is Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. We have had quite a year, and it's been quite a year, 2016. I mean, we began this year with the scandal that was Gian Gomeshi.
That's right.
And Gian ultimately skated. And we finished this year spending a lot of time talking about violence against women's issues. We've had several guests on discussing that particular issue. And, I mean, it just seems like one of those issues that no matter how often we talk about it, it doesn't seem to change. I think, from what I understand, though, incidents of violence against women have, in fact, started to be on the decline.
Well, it was really interesting because it was early in January that we had Sonia Veliga, the executive director of the Kawartha Sexual Assault Center, came on and talked to us. And then we had our good friend Colin Brown, who is a lawyer, come and talk to us as well about sort of the legal aspects of it and what's going on in the local courts.
Mm-hmm.
And then we brought in Alona Klankenhauser, who also added to the conversation, and she talked as a former counselor for the Cornerstone Women's Assault Center locally, gave an incredible discussion about, from a women's perspective, about the trial and her perspective. We talked about it quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. And several shows.
That's correct. I mean, we gave quite a bit of time to this issue, which of course it deserved. And I guess the thing was, is as we watched Gomeshi go from the charges to the trial itself, and then the post trial, I think at each time we come back to it, it was always a different approach that we were trying to take, and
mm-hmm.
better understanding how these issues affect our community.
Exactly. And of course, as I said, we wrapped up the year with our fundraiser and our fundraiser at the radio station, but as well as our conversation on Cornerstone.
Absolutely.
So great. Again, it was a full year of that kind of conversation. One of the other issues that we talked a lot about this year was the hospital. We talked a lot. We spoke a lot at the very beginning of the year. We spoke to representatives mm-hmm. from the hospital. Jack Russell was in here, and we were talking to him about the hospital, how they were desperate for funding. And then as the year went on, towards the end of the year, I mean, I know Lou Rinaldi just made another announcement, I think it was a week ago.
Yep.
And so we've seen over the last, I think, 4 months, in the last quarter of this year, where the hospital has received probably close to $3 million.
Well, it's been interesting because when you go back and you listen to that first interview, it was just after the report had been done by the Lynn, and, you know, all of it was looking rather dark. But at the same time, I think we had Jack Russell on and Lynn Davis, and they were both arguing vehemently that once this report sort of came into being, then that would lay the groundwork for how to proceed. But I brought two clips along. One of them is you asking a question of Jack Russell about the situation. I'm wondering if you could play that for us and just listen to the response that he gives you.
All righty, we'll see if we can't get that fired up. When it comes to funding, though, is it fair to say the buck stops at the Lynn? Like, is there no way to go past the Lynn? I mean, right now, as we know, and we've seen the news reports and all this, I mean, as you say, as far as your peer group is concerned, you are running probably one of the most efficient bare bones. You know, it's a gold standard among other hospitals, all of these wonderful things, and yet it still does not motivate the Lynn. Is there a means by which hospital can say, well, you know what, you're obviously not listening, or you're not seeing where our needs are. Is there somewhere we can go above there? Can we go directly to the ministry?
If you look closely at the hospital improvement plan,
mm-hmm.
you'll see that with the money that we're getting this year, we will balance this year.
Mm-hmm.
The changes that we're making, the savings that we're going to achieve, we're not going to be able to balance without some additional help. That has been identified. It mm-hmm. has been discussed, and we do have a willingness on the part of the Lynn to continue to work with us at identifying additional sources of revenue to ensure that we can maintain our sustainability over the longer term.
Well, there you go. So that was back in February of last year,
this year, that's right. And it your question was so pointed, and he answered so directly, but we had little idea that there was going to be this funding follow-through that would be coming on later this year.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I mean, that was really, you really got to the crux of it. I mean, it was fine that they were talking about, oh, we do all these great things, which they had mentioned earlier mm-hmm. in the interview. But here you were pressing the point that, you know, with all this, you know, when does the rubber hit the road kind of thing? And I thought, you know, he answered, well, we're going to balance the budget, but, you know, we've got to find a way to solve our financial problems. And of course, we saw that come through. I brought another clip from that conversation where I pushed him on, pushed both he and the executive director on the future of the hospital and what was coming up. Maybe you could play that for us as well.
Well, we'll do that. We'll get right to
it. Jack, what can you say from an administrative point of view or from a board's point of view about the way that things are run? Because it seems to me, you know, they're talking about putting the community care piece with the LHINs. But it sounds to me like the hospital doesn't have enough say in sort of, you know, we need a walk-in clinic. Let's get a walk-in clinic going. We need better long-term care. Where are those lobbying efforts coming so that this happens? Because obviously the hospital, the CEO, she can't wave a wand and say, okay, you know, we're going to build a long-term care unit, or we're going to create a walk-in clinic. We've got to wait for the family health team to do it, or we've got to wait for long-term care funding. When are we going to get control of our destiny here so that these services can start to mesh together?
Well, it's interesting. There's a white paper that was issued by Dr. Eric Hoskins just within the last couple of months, and it covers a lot of the accessibility issues, and I believe there's an opportunity right now for people to have input into that white paper and the questions that are posed on it. It does give the public an opportunity to say what they would like to see. You know, as a board, we can discuss these things and we can put suggestions forward to the LHIN, or we can go directly online to the ministry's website where you can provide input on the white paper. But I would encourage anyone who is interested to go and have a good read at that and look at the questions that are being posed and provide some input to it.
Well, one has to wonder what kind of input they were getting from that, from the responses, the request for response, rather, that they put out back there. I guess we'll have to interview them again to find
out. Well, what's fascinating, though, is that in terms of the local board determining the destiny of the hospital, nothing has really changed. Yes, the money has come through, but I don't know if you feel it, but do we really have control of what's going on up there? You know, we had a great phone in during that show too, and somebody was really pushing hard about, you know, some of the internal strife that was going on as well. So, I mean, I don't think it's clear about where the local control is. I still think, you know, it's being held by the LHIN. The other thing that was interesting about this is you and I interviewed Lou Rinaldi just a few weeks ago, and we were talking to him about this kind of stuff, and he was sort of saying, well, in terms of control, local control, so not so much. And we don't, you know, we're not going to be seeing long-term care dollars down here. And he couldn't be concrete about, you know, what is the future. He was just more about, okay, you know, we're going to get them through the budgets and that.
He did talk about the fact that there's going to be essentially another, if you will, splinter organization from the LHINs.
That's right.
Which is, I guess, going to be... I mean, it does beg to the question that you're alluding to, which is, well, what the hell is the point of even having a board? What's the point of having? I mean, if all they are is administrators and people who shuffle papers on behalf of the various levels of provincial governments, then what the hell is even the point?
Well, and it's been interesting, too, because I know the hospital has been doing a lot of public consultations. They've held public meetings. They're trying to get input. And then at the same time, we're seeing stories about they're seeing surges in demand, that they're struggling to meet the local demand for the area. So it, as always, it's this interesting jambalaya of factors that are pushing up against each other. And it seems like, you know, we win one, we get some funding, and then there's other pressures that are coming in, and we're still not getting the formula quite right. So I think it's something, you know, we'll have to come back to in the new year.
Well, I think as long as beds are being held by people who could otherwise be in a long-term care facility, this problem is not going to go away. I mean, we have this problem, and we've had people on before. We had a conversation with people talking about long-term care and what do we do and how people get an option. There's three choices of where you can go for your long-term care. The first choice will always be to try and get you as close to your home as possible, but you could be sent to Hell's Half Acre, and that hasn't changed. I mean, we have not seen any difference in that. The provincial government has not made any movement towards increasing funding for long-term care. They've been at loggerheads with the federal government. I mean, for those listeners out there that have been paying attention to what's happening at the federal government negotiation table, there really hasn't been any movement there. I mean, it goes back to really an overall lack of funding. It really comes down to a lack of funding. And then, because of course, when you've got to tighten the purse strings, then you've got to make sure that you are the ones who are in control of the purse strings. The local boards can say whatever the heck they want, but when it comes to actually releasing that money, when the belt gets tighter, fewer and fewer shekels will come dropping out.
Well, but here's the point. There has been multiple funding announcements in the last few months, and very generous and much needed monies to bring some stability. Mm-hmm. The thing is, what we're saying, I think, is it's still not enough. And there's still a need. I mean, when Lou was here, he was talking about beds opening up at the east end of the county, but not at this end of the county. And you know, what's got to happen down at this end before we're going to get what we need, as you say, to move some of those people out, to free up those beds that will help adjust costs. And hopefully that'll make a difference in terms of the services that they provide and meeting the needs of the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely a question that we should be posing to our member of parliament as well, because I think a large part of the problem, in my estimation anyway, I mean, I talked to people over the weekend, over Christmas vacation, I talked to a couple of people who said, you know, they don't remember having to wait in the hallways at the emergency when they were young. They don't remember having to, you know, wait online for this treatment or that treatment. It's just been since there's been this change in how the funding rolls through. And really, you know, it does rest a lot of it with the federal government and their unwillingness to pay what should be their portion, which should be 50 cents on the dollar. I mean, that was the original health accord. That was the original health act. It was the feds would pay 50 cents. The provinces would pay 50 cents. And the Supreme Court said the province had 100% control over how that money gets spent. I mean, even during the last negotiations with Jane Philpott, it was like, well, we're only going to give you this, but if you want money earmarked for this and this, yeah, we'll give you more money. So again, that's the feds trying to say how the money gets spent.
And it gets too many chefs in the kitchen, I think, you know, and the bottom line is that if they're going to participate in healthcare spending, then it shouldn't be with strings attached, because, I mean, resources have to go where resources are needed. And, you know, I mean, you look at what the local hospital has gone through just to be able to get the funding that they did get. I mean, those reports, and I mean, they've cut right, not just to the bone, into the marrow.
Yep.
And I, you know, from that caller that we had on the show, I mean, you could see that, you could hear the frustration of what's going on.
Well, even especially on the part of the staff, as the caller indicated. Yeah. I mean, the staff at the hospital don't know from one day to the next just, you know, what exactly is going on. And if they don't know, how are they going to be able to be able to provide the service that they are supposed to be able to provide if they're concerned about whether or not they're going to have a job the next day?
And also, too, I mean, you look, we were talking about a medical arts building back at the beginning of this year, and there was so much promise. And I think Jack, during that interview that we talked about, he was mentioning how upbeat they were that this could come through, this would bring some real benefits and sort of consolidate things. And that just hasn't happened.
No.
And from what I'm hearing right now, I hear that it's a dead deal now.
It could very well be. We're going to take our first break of the hour. When we come back, more of our year in review. You're listening to The Drive Time, Northumberland 89.7. This is Consider This Live, heard every Wednesday at this time with myself and Rob Washburn.
Hi, I'm Pete Hamilton and I'm responsible for Mystic. Have you ever noticed how one person's noise is another person's music, is another person's background sound? That's what the Mystic is about, adventures in sound, music and noise. You can hear it every Saturday at 9 in the evening and it's repeated the following Friday at 2 in the morning by Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Come on out to Hometown Bingo on Saturday, December the 31st for our New Year's Eve Day Bingos. Regular bingo sessions and paper pricing. Jackpot for 9:45 p.m. session is $2,017. Come out and enjoy a free lunch at 11:30 a.m., free dinner at 6 and a free luncheon at 11:30 p.m. We are located at 884 Division Street. Call us at 905-372-5426 or visit us at hometownbingo.ca. Our license number is 7884.
Come out and enjoy a fabulous movie-going experience at the Rainbow Cinemas.
Playing December 23rd to December 29th. Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, rated PG, no free passes accepted. Sing, rated G, and Why Him, rated 14A, no free passes accepted.
The Rainbow Cinemas are located in the Northumberland Mall, 1111 Elgin Street West. Give them a call, 905-372-2444, or visit rainbowcinemas.ca.
Listen to Northumberland 89.7 live online at tunein.com/Northumberland89.7.
And welcome back to the big broadcast. I'm Dave Glover, with me in studio, Rob Washburn. We're talking about the year that was. We'll have some great audio because we've had quite an eclectic mix of guests here.
Indeed. And, it was really interesting because we had one that was particularly notable was Stan Bletcher, Dr. Stan Bletcher, who won the Ontario Senior of the Year Award. He's the individual from Port Hope. I know you were particularly fascinated with what he talked about.
Well, I reference the interview with him quite often, especially when we talk about rates of cancer and health issues, because, he talked about when he started his professional career, which would have been, 35, 40 years ago, that, cancer was like one in a million. It was so rare. It was, oh, wow, somebody has cancer? Wow, that's incredible. It's so devastating, isn't it? Yes. But it was such a rare thing. Mm-hmm. But now, we just had that conversation with the health unit, and it's like one in three now.
Yeah.
One in three. And so we got to ask ourselves, what is going on, and why isn't anyone actually addressing that? If this was measles, if one in three Ontarians was dying of measles, that would be considered an epidemic. It would be considered an epidemic. And yet we have one in three Ontarians dying from cancer. And the number's even higher for people with diagnosis. Thankfully, we're able to save some of those lives. But one in two in Ontario will get cancer. That is crazy, crazy numbers. And yet there doesn't appear to be anything other than we hear cancer marches this or this, wear this pin or that pin. Or, we look at what happened with Hector McMillan and his situation.
Absolutely.
With regards to the treatment that he was able to get. Offshore.
Uh-huh.
And the struggle that he's protesting at Queen's Park, I think, as we speak tonight about the whole issue. So, when is it that the provincial government is going to consider it, or when is the federal government going to consider cancer an epidemic and start looking for solutions?
Well, I can't say that they're not looking for solutions. You know, millions and millions of dollars are raised. There's research going on all the time. There's innovations taking place on a regular basis.
I think that money's being spent to help fight cancer. It's not being spent to find a cure for cancer. We're seeing all kinds of money being spent. And again, there's no proof out there that they're actually looking for a cure for cancer. They will tell you they're looking for a cure, but all they're spending the money on is lots of money going on advertisement and a lot of money spent on treatment, which is wonderful. But let's look at what is causing the cancer. Does nobody know?
Well, that was what was interesting about Dr. Bletcher was, he was starting to put pieces together in terms of incineration and what was going out into the air and the impacts that this is having on us. And nobody was really paying attention. And he's been a very strong voice locally and provincially and internationally on those issues.
Absolutely. So, again, I want to thank him for being on the show. I'd love to have him back on the show to talk about this issue a little more. But, he's just one of a myriad. We had Jeff Gard here, sports director for Northumberland Today.
Absolutely. We were talking about the new Kodiaks. They had just been announced, the lacrosse team. And, of course, they had a very successful season, inaugural season. So that was really cool. We had Todd Dinal, an author, talked about the greatest game.
Actually, we had him on a couple times, didn't we?
I think we had
him on twice, did we not, for both his newest books?
Yep, that's true. You're absolutely right. And we also we talked to Rich Quartermeyer several times. Yep, sorry, I apologize. Talking about the American election and American politics. And I thought those were some of the most animated discussions we had.
They were. Well, he knows his stuff. He is a knowledgeable cat from the United States. And we are just very lucky to be able to get him on the show, I think.
Well, one of the things that I was most proud of is the last show, just before the vote, you and I would not make a commitment to who was going to win. And we both said, anything could happen. And sure enough, I think a lot of people, I know I was incredibly shocked. And we still I haven't got my head around what it's going to look like after the inauguration, and he's actually president. It's
well,
going to be crazy.
I'm going to stick my hat in with that of a satirist, Jonathan Pye from the UK, mm-hmm. who right around the same time you and I were having that conversation, he predicted a Trump victory. And I mean, I thought, you can tell from the conversation, and we don't have that clip, unfortunately, but you could tell from that conversation that I was of a mind that it looked like it was probably going to be Trump. I wasn't willing to say it, but I was not surprised when Donald Trump became the elected president of the United States.
And it's been quite a transition between the election and coming up to the inauguration. I mean, we've been seeing so many dynamics taking place, and I don't care who you talk to. I think everybody's concerned about sort of how this is all going to play out, like what sort of an impact is this going to have globally, mm-hmm. and particularly in the United States, and because we're their closest neighbor and
they're our largest trading partner,
it's going to have a massive impact here in Canada.
It
so
is.
I'm sure we're going to be talking to him again in the new year.
Oh, I'm sure we will. And I want to thank him for coming by the studio just before the Christmas break as well, and wish him a happy Hanukkah, because it's still Hanukkah, so we'll wish him a happy Hanukkah today as well. And also, Corey Jacobs. Corey was on. Yeah. Now, Corey is going to be doing a regular weekly thing here starting in January.
Amazing.
He's got the 52 weeks of Canada's 150.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got a show each week dedicated to one particular story.
That's Cale Crowe, though, isn't it?
Oh, I apologize. That is Cale Crowe. I'm sorry. Corey, of course, was here to do the news for
some
time.
Yep.
That's right, and also is a student of yours, I understand.
That's correct. But we did an interview with him around National Aboriginal Day, and he came in and talked to us. And the clip that I brought in with me, I thought was one of the more poignant moments that we've had over the last year, because you played one of those Heritage Minutes,
yeah.
And it was about Charlie Wenjack, and he was very, very moved. I thought he was almost going to break down
mm-hmm.
When he heard it. You could tell it moved him deeply. And then you got talking about treaty rights, and then I asked him a question, and he gave this answer, and I think you sort of set him up for this.
Corey, do you ever get angry about this?
Yeah, I do. just as you asked me that, I felt like something boiled up there. But like, because those treaties, you know, they're talking words, all kinds of words that people didn't understand. And they're like, well, you could hunt, but that doesn't include fishing, right? Or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come up with all kinds of bureaucratical words, and it only means you get potato... the one reserve over in Manitoba, they're supposed to get flour, potatoes, and something else, and then instead they just change it to $5. You just get $5 instead, and you can go a lot further with flour and potatoes than $5.
Good point.
Well, interesting. You made a point just after that to say that $5 in those days was what would have been seen as a lot of money, but at the same time, it was not honoring the rights
no.
and the treaties.
Well, it didn't honor the spirit of the treaty either. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, you know, there's one thing to say, well, you know, we've honored the letter of the law or the letter of the treaty, but if you don't honor the spirit of the treaty, I mean, by saying, oh, well, in lieu of, we're going to give you this, well... You know, it's like I said to the, you know, I'm going to bring this up again. It's like I said to the Minister of Health, you know, when I was talking to her about healthcare financing, mm-hmm. Carolyn Bennett, when she was the health mm-hmm. minister. And I said to her, look, you can't take a tax credit to the grocery store. You can't. You can't take a non-refundable tax credit to the grocery store, and you can't take a tax credit, because the argument that the feds have given over the past decade or two has been that, well, you know, we may not give 50 cents on the dollar, but we give the equivalent back in tax credits for the provinces, you know, which brings two questions to mind. A, what the hell is a tax credit going to do? And B, why are provincial governments paying taxes to the federal government, right? So again, I mean, that doesn't go to the treaty issue, but again, it's how they tell you one thing, but you get something else.
Well,
right?
It's going to be a really pivotal year, I think, on this portfolio for the federal government. I think we'll probably see the Missing and Murdered Women's Commission probably get up and get going.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also been a lot of pressure in the last couple of months
around some of the promises that the Liberal government made, particularly Trudeau made during the campaign, mm-hmm. and whether they're going to be following through with those. Monies for education, housing, water purification. I mean, you know, those are going to be still front and center. Mm-hmm. And especially Standing Rock, even though Standing Rock has been resolved, now with the pipeline and those kinds of things, I mean, I think we're a long way away from any of this disappearing.
Well, I think with 175,000 liters of oil leaking out of one of those tributary pipelines in North Dakota over the last week, adjacent to Standing Rock, and the fact that the protesters are still at Standing Rock and the police are still at Standing Rock, I'd say Standing Rock has not ended. But you're right, because look at the one of the reasons why the pipelines were held up in the West, for instance, was because it was determined by the Supreme Court of Canada that proper consultation hadn't been done with First Nations. And this mm-hmm. government is saying that they have a solid commitment to ensure that negotiations are done with First Nations before anything is approved. And yet they've just approved two pipelines.
Yeah, and I think the there's a real coalescing. We had a speaker into one of my classes just before the end of the year, and one of the things that she was talking about in terms of Indigenous issues is this sense now of First Nations people coalescing around being water protectors,
mm-hmm.
and that movement, which Idle No More, I think it may be even more broad-based and more potent in terms of its ability to capture the imaginations and the solidarity of many Canadians.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And especially when we are seeing issues. I mean, there's just a story recently about problems with some dams locally and mm-hmm. other things like that. I mean, you know, as we start to look at alternative energy sources, for instance, I had a piece I read a little earlier today that solar is officially the cheapest energy source on the planet right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know why that wasn't a given, but it just is. You know, the sun's free. It's right there, you know. But, I mean, we're starting to see this rethink, if you will, not just globally, but starting to see that inch in here locally. I mean, even John Kasich in Ohio just lifted the ban on solar down there. So, I mean, it's about time is what I'm saying, I guess. So we yep. start to think that, you know, energy infrastructure doesn't have to be oil and gas, just like energy infrastructure 120 years ago doesn't have to be coal.
But I also think the fact that Indigenous people are going to become leaders, I believe, in this country around those protests is mm-hmm. going to be incredibly significant.
Well, and it's time for those voices to be heard. I would have to concur on that one. Well, some of the other guests we've had in here as well, we've talked about homeless issues. We've talked about fishing in Port Hope, which was actually a really interesting show.
Some of the stories that mm-hmm.
Councillor Lee's
brought in were just hair-raising. In fact, I brought in a clip of one of the stories that he told us, and it's just, it's jaw-dropping.
Well, let's give that a listen, if we could, listeners.
The tension between the promotion of tourism and then this kind of abuse is always interests me, because it is so tense. It mm-hmm. is so tense to say, on one hand, you work so hard to promote this as a resource, to promote it as an activity within the mm-hmm. community, to draw tourists here, to bring those dollars in, to help the local economy. And yet at the same time, with these abuses, you end up spending so much money and so many resources and trying to just keep everybody to play by the rules.
That's right. Yeah, we do. And you know, that's the other thing. We had our marketing department at this meeting as well, and they said last year the amount of people coming in that were tourists that were, you know, walking around town coming in and saying, what's with all that mess over there and why are those people doing that? Other people that don't understand why those people are doing it. They know it's wrong, but in broad daylight, it's not like people are hiding it anymore. You know, on last Sunday, I watched the guy running up the river with a net in one hand and a fishing pole in the other, and he was trying to net that fish right in open broad daylight in front of three people, Parks foreman, myself, and another man. He was standing right in front of us, running up the river, trying to net that salmon, which is, we all know, is illegal. Anybody knows that. That's an easy one. And the guy was doing it in broad daylight at 9:30 Sunday morning.
And I mean, you could just hear the disgust and the shock in John Lee's, not John Lee, sorry, in Jeff Lee's voice there with regards to how it was being done, and just like how brazen is that?
And also, I mean, the stories of one person taking 27 fish.
Yeah.
Or others who just grab the fish for their roe and split them open, yep. Grab the roe so that they can continue to fish and throw the carcasses aside. So that was really really an eye-opener. Mm-hmm. And I haven't heard anything about the final report on how that all ended up and how many charges got laid. I will have to go back and maybe get him back on.
We'll have to do a follow-up with Jeff. Absolutely.
Absolutely. The other thing that was really interesting, though, about this year is I wasn't part of these conversations, but you held them and I put them up on the website. And that was the resignation of two local municipal councillors, Teresa Rickerby, mm-hmm. and then Sherwin.
Larry Sherwin.
Larry Sherwin. I always get him mixed up with another Sherwin who ran for Hamilton Township, and mm-hmm. he always gets mad at me. But anyway, so two councillors, and there was quite a bit of controversy, not only about the resignation and the way that it was done, but also in the way that people were being replaced. And I know you had a lot of strong thoughts at the time when Teresa stepped down, and, mm-hmm. and I thought it was sort of an interesting conversation that we ended up having about that.
Well, absolutely. Again, I mean, I believe in democracy. I'm a strong advocate for democracy. I think the people should be able to have a say. And if we're going to replace people with whoever was the closest also ran, then, you know, what's the point of having a democracy? Why don't you just call everyone to a town meeting and those people who are smart enough to show up can raise a hand to determine who wants to be in charge? And it kind of reminded me of the scene in The Holy Grail, where the king approaches the two peasants looking in the mud, and he's like, "Who lives in that castle? No one lives in that castle. We're a narco-singulus collective. You know, we each bi-weekly, we take it upon ourselves to elect someone who will be responsible. Well, who's the lord? There isn't a lord." He's like, "Well, who's in charge?" "Well, you know, I said we're a collective. You know, I mean, are we a democracy? Are we some kind of collective? Or, you know, I mean, do people's voices count?" And the argument put forth by council was, well, it costs too much money. But what price democracy, I say.
But also, too, I mean, it gets to a point where we're now going to have two people who were basically appointed to the positions. And you wonder at what point, you know, is it we're just finding people who will agree with us.
Well, that, you know, that raises a really good point, you know, because are we then appointing yes men? Is that what we're doing? Just appointing yes men and yes women, if you will? Is that really what we should be doing? Is that how democracy is supposed to work? I don't know.
Yep. And the other thing, we had two more guests that I wanted to mention. We had the local PFLAG group come in and talk mm-hmm. to us about the Pride Parade, and now that's going to be going forward in the new year. I thought that was a really interesting conversation, because it's not something that many people talk about, how young people who are sorting through their sexual orientation in a small rural town, what sort of services are available to them, mm-hmm. what sort of support are they getting, and it's just an amazing group of young people that are behind this and doing a fabulous job in our community representing them. The other thing that was that sort of caught my eye was we had on Daniel Caseda, the migrant workers coordinator, later mm-hmm. in the year. And that's, again, it was another group that we don't hear very much about. And yet at the same time, they are a huge part of our community, our economy, but also the social fabric of our community as well. So those were some other people who were as part of our program over the last year.
Absolutely. And people who make a difference, right?
Absolutely. The other thing, too, is I brought another clip of one of the groups when we that brought the refugees in. This group, we interviewed them several times over the year mm-hmm. Just to keep on top of what was happening with the refugees. But there's a really wonderful clip, a very human moment that they described.
Well, I'm going to play that clip in just a moment. But before we do that, we're going to take our last break, our second break of the hour.
Okay.
And when we come back, we'll have that. But I'm going to play this clip for you as well, listeners, as we head to commercial.
Old woman!
Man!
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
I haven't always been a medium, but I have always heard voices. Hello, I'm psychic medium, author, and lecturer Linda Ouellette, and I'll be hosting Mind of a Medium, the radio show. I'll be live right here on Northumberland 89.7 from 10 to 11 a.m. to take your calls and share stories from my life as a medium. You can reach me at 905-372-2321 or find me on Facebook. Join me the first and third Tuesday of every month for Mind of a Medium on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Come on out to Hometown Bingo, open every day from 12:30 to 7 p.m., Monday through Wednesday. Thursday to Sunday, 12:30 to 9:45. $2 per paper strips all day Fridays and 7 p.m. daily paper specials. We are located at 884 Division Street. Give us a call at 905-372-5426 or visit us online at hometownbingo.ca. Our license number is 7844.
Did you ever expect a radio show to be this great?
No, I just tuned in. I hadn't been really enjoying radio. At first I thought, I'm not going to like it. But here I am every day, listening, singing. I'm so happy to have found this show.
Listen to The Morning Show with Jim Glover, Monday to Friday, 7 till 10. News, weather, and sports on the hour, plus great features. Cameco Northumberland, Big Beat, The Chicken Man, Lost Rock and Roll Classics, and many other surprises, all right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Jim McGrath understands that as much as we don't want to talk about it, wills and estate planning is a responsible thing to do for you and your family. With his help, you can reflect on your values and wishes and have a legal direction to let others know what kind of health and personal care you would want if you could not speak for yourself. Jim McGrath has been a lawyer for over 30 years, and he understands the law, so you don't have to. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999.
To Northumberland 89.7.ca and click on the Listen Live button and tune in. No radio required.
Alrighty, well, that was our last break of the hour, and joining me back in the studio here, Rob Washburn, and that was a clip from Monty Python's Holy Grail. Obviously, that was the reference I was making earlier, and you know, it's funny because you know, I saw that movie when I was a small boy. I think maybe that was something that helped form some of my political angst. I don't know.
I can't imagine how that happened, Dave. But anyway, I'd like to talk, though, a bit about the Better Together group. And I brought in a clip, as I said just before the break, about a lovely story that one of the members told us during the interview. It's been new and exciting from their side of the culture. What have you done that's...
One of the potlucks that we were at, the men were in the kitchen and the women were in the living room. And after we had eaten, we started talking about dance and, you know, what a cultural dance is for them. And we ended up, the women ended up just dancing around the coffee table in the living room. And it was just so much fun. And we all fell down laughing. And it just was so much fun. And they loved being able to share that with us. And we loved sharing it with us.
A great human moment that they share. That story was wonderful. Another human moment, though, I think, was when we had the group in talking about the homeless study, that landmark study that they just released this fall. We talked about the humanity of homelessness, and I brought along a clip that I thought was really typifies that conversation about recognizing these people and seeing them as individuals and as people rather than just a bunch of stats.
Just to follow up on that VSPADAT statistic, that sounds like a pretty technical tool, and yet what we're talking about are human beings. I mean, should we be concerned that we're starting to just sort of jam people into a database and crunch them through, or are we still remembering that we're dealing with people?
The VSPADAT tool is much like a triage nurse in an emergency department. So you come through the door, you meet with someone, they gather a little bit of information with you, and then they learn how to direct you somewhere. And that's exactly how we're using the tool. We're collecting a little bit of basic information about people so that we can direct them to the right services. Our intention going forward, we collected personal information and contact information from people who were willing to share that with us. Mm-hmm. And our intention going forward is to meet with and connect with all of those individuals that we surveyed so that we can get them closer to services and share what's currently available and new opportunities as they become available.
So it sounds to me like the exact opposite of what you think.
I'll ask somebody who's on the ground though, David. Have we been in through this process? Have we lost the human element to this issue?
Part of the reason that I joined in with this process, it's been very collaborative. It's been a great experience to work on this, and part of what I took from this is the human components, if you will. I'm not really a systems kind of person, and I interact with people most of the time. What I saw in this, you know, as Carrie mentioned, that this is a for the first time a by name registry, where there's now a person with a story that we're working with. This isn't a bird count. This is a relationship that it develops as we sit down and share that information. And the other is the prioritization of this too. That we've got the most. We're dealing with some of the most vulnerable people, and so they should get priority.
Well, and I think he's right.
Absolutely. I remember, too, I was so surprised to learn that the number of families that were homeless. Mm-hmm. And I think they agreed that this was one of the shocking things that came out of the study and what will be done. So I hope we can get them back over the next year.
Well, it's something that I mentioned while we were talking about that, too, because, you know, I've spoken to Lou Rinaldi now, both here in our studios, but also on TV Kojiko for probably pretty close to a decade. And in that time, I've had the conversation with Lou a number of times about homelessness and poverty in this part of the province, and how, you know, people in Toronto and the majority of MPs at Queen's Park, right, frankly, are from Toronto, right, or the larger urban centers. And they are of the understanding that there is no poverty. In their minds, poverty doesn't exist here. It's an urban issue. It's strictly an urban issue. It doesn't happen in rural Ontario. And it is with the evidence-based documentation that Lou can now go back to Queen's Park and say, here is the paperwork. Here are the people. These are actual people who are suffering. These are actual Ontarians who live in rural Ontario who are, in fact, suffering, just like the guy who's sleeping rough on the streets in front of Queen's Park.
And I think the other exciting aspect of this is that the protocols that they've created, the study, the way that they've approached it, is replicable in other small communities across the province. And I think once other communities start doing this kind of thing, we're going to see a very, very different picture, one that we're not accustomed to, and I think we'll all be very surprised at the result.
Well, I think Queen's Park's often surprised by the results that come from rural Ontario. You know, this idea that Queen's Park is this ivory tower that, I mean, I've always been someone who says, well, I got to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to give the premier the benefit of the doubt. You know, that they're not from Toronto. They're from, you know, another part of the province or whatever. They should know differently. But for whatever reason, when it comes down to it, when the rubber hits the road, as it will, that road is a paved road, or a paved road, rather, in Toronto or Windsor or Hamilton or some other urban center, not a paved road in Hamilton Township.
Indeed. One of the last things that I brought in, because we're running out of time, is one of the interviews that I found most engaging, and it was with Ian Angus, the former Reeve of Hope Township and the fly in the ointment of Port Hope Council. Yeah. And the conversation we had, which I know you walked away just shaking your head about the trust fund, and this is a great moment between you and Ian Angus.
You're getting into an area that is, you know, we'd all like to see people held accountable for their misdeeds. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, when you look at the elected arena, there's sort of a semi-immunity to being held to account for your stupidity or your negligence or your outright... you know, manipulation of.
Well, I mean, that's a valid question, right? I mean, because if this was, you know, KPMG, some guy, you know, Mario, who's running the trust for you, and then you know he's pocketing this money, there would be legal ramifications for someone else.
There's a big difference between an elected official and a person who is a trustee. There are specific and very strict duties on a trustee.
Well, then it may be very specific and strict duties, but I still think someone's got a gambling problem.
Well, I'll tell you.
I mean, money just doesn't. You know, you don't just take money. It's, you know, this goes back to the conversation we had with Corey Jacobs, where he's talking about how you agree to one thing, but then you get something entirely different.
It'll be interesting, Dave. A year from now, we'll have to make a note to each other if we're still talking about this.
Well, this is still an issue that hasn't gone away.
It hasn't.
That interview was not so long ago, but I mean, I still remember. I mean, one of my favorite lines from that interview was when I said to him, you know, when Bob Sanderson sat in that chair, he said, this is a situation that can be solved over a cup of coffee. And Ian Angus said, well, we had that cup of coffee and it was resolved until council reconvened. And then all of a sudden it wasn't resolved anymore. So, you know, it does beg the question, though, what happened to the money? What happened to the money? Because the bottom line is, as per the trust, if it was spent anywhere other than on a tax reduction for the people of former Hope Township, then it was improperly spent. It doesn't matter if it was spent on roads in Hope Township. It doesn't matter if it was spent to beautify the library up in Cold Spring. None of that is relevant when you look at the fact that the trust was very, very, very specific in terms of where that money could be spent.
You know, you and I, we've had some really good conversations over the last year. Thanks so much, Dave.
We have. I want to thank you for volunteering to jump on the bandwagon with me here. I mean, we've been doing this almost the full 3 years.
Yep.
And it's been just an incredible, incredible ride. I'm looking forward to next year because it's Canada's 150.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about it because, of course, 50 years ago, folks, we're talking Summer of Love. So maybe we'll pick Rob's brain on what he remembers from the Summer of Love, although they do say, if you remember the Summer of Love, you weren't actually there. I'm Dave Glover. You've been listening to Consider This Live on Truly Local Radio Northumberland 89.7. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. And as always, Rob, I look forward to our next broadcast next week. Have yourselves a happy, happy new year. You and your family, Rob.
Thank you. Same to yours.
We'll be doing the big New Year's Eve wrap-up thing, I guess. Or I guess I'm not on the air New Year's Eve, am I? No, that's a Saturday night. Oh, I guess we'll have to just listen to the station for Saturday night's New Year's Eve rockin' fest. I believe they got something pretty groovy lined up. Fantastic. Here's Judy Collins. And remember, you know, when you're having a conversation, there are two sides. Two sides to every conversation. Here's Judy Collins with Both Sides Now.
Goes and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feathered canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's clouds' illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds. Something's gained.